Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Diane Collins, who is the author of Do You Quantum Think? New Thinking That Will Rock Your World. Diane has a fabulous book of how we can actually change not just our world and our worldview, but explains how to do it. And I think that this particular book should be read by anyone who is on the spiritual path. Thanks, Diane, for joining us.
Thank you so much, Susan, for having me. I'm just thrilled to be with you.
In your book, you have a very interesting story about having an idea to call up a Nobel laureate to get some advice. Would you like to tell our audience about that experience?
Yes, I would. And, you know, I really told this story in the context of discovering, you know, we all want to live our purpose and know how does our purpose, worldly purpose that is unique to us, get expressed along the way in life. So what happened is I was in a corporate job and at the time, and I had this dream of creating a television series that elevated consciousness as you watch, you know, something entertaining anyway, which I still have that dream, but I diverge from the topic. So what happened is I thought, well, how do I get myself to be independent rather than working in, you know, for a company where, so I wanted to be freelance. And I thought, well, I'm a fairly decent writer. If I could write these, you know, soft romance novels that look pretty short, so they would be pretty easy to do. And I could, you know, I knew how much people were getting paid for them at the time. I thought, well, if I wrote four of these a year, it was very logical, Susan. If I wrote four of these a year, I could make X amount of money, and then that would replace my corporate income, and I could do it and be independent.
Right.
So I started writing, and I thought, wait a minute, I can't do this. And I thought, what's wrong? And then, as I tell in the story, I was friends with my cousin in New York. I live in Miami. And I was like, you know what? Isaac Bashevis Singer lives in Miami Beach in the winter. I'm calling him up, and I'm going to ask him. You know, it was like a delirium. It was like, am I crazy?
So it worked out well, though.
It worked out very well. I called him up. I called him. And he said, a marketer, you know, because I studied philosophy and psychology in college. He goes, a philosopher turned marketer turned writer. This I've got to meet. You know, I have this adorable Polish-Jewish accent. And so we met the next day for coffee. And I said, why am I having such a hard time writing this thing? I think I know how to write a little bit. He goes, in order to write junk, you've got to have a junky soul. And I like to say right away, disclaimer for him, he didn't mean, and he said to me, he doesn't mean that romance novels are junk, but he was very poignant in his writing, if anyone has ever read him. It's like, you know, very strong, you know, imagery in his writing where it penetrates right to your soul. So that's what he was doing with me. That was his way. And I got it, Susan. It was like, oh, that's not me.
Right.
And so, of course, I can't. I'm having difficulty with it.
See, that is such an important concept. In fact, one of my friends is a romance novelist who I absolutely love her stories. So I agree with you. It's not each of us has to follow our own path. And her path was, she was in the corporate world, similar to you, but she had this gift for writing romance novels that then turned in later to mystery, humorous novels. And her writing is absolutely delightful. But the point is, and that's why I brought this up first, is that we all have our own guidance systems. And you can't use logic to step off the path that you're on. and you were using logic to step off your path into
That's
something
exactly
that
right.
you couldn't do. And I just love it that your soul got you to a Nobel laureate to get you back on your path.
I know.
That's
How crazy
so great.
Was that? And, you know, that was the other lesson, really, because I thought, now that you're bringing it up, I'm thinking of, for myself now, because as we're in these changing times for everyone, mm-hmm. and we're all feeling that kind of pulsation, that sort mm-hmm. of soul yearning to be expressing ourselves in a new way. I'm a, right. I call astrology my hobby. I'm a student of astrology, so I'm studying always planetary energy trends. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know a lot of people don't take it seriously, but if you follow it, there is something to it. But so I know that we're all feeling that, and it is right now. So you just reminded me, Susan, it's like, what was the other lesson? You know, the lesson was, right, I can't do something out of sync with my own soul. Mm-hmm. And the other lesson was being bold. Taking these bold moves
mm-hmm.
for me,
right.
you know, what it is for you, you know, it might be something different. But that just reminds me.
Oh, I just quit my job for 5 months. That's all I did. Just quit my job because I was
diagnosed
to quit my job. And, you know, but no, you do have to go through your guidance system. I was reminded of this just about an hour ago. Even though I wasn't hungry, I got up from reading your book and wandered into the kitchen, went right to one bowl of food that my supervisor gave me yesterday, started eating it even though I wasn't hungry, and then I remembered I needed to take 2 pills that are antibiotics and you have to have some food on your stomach. I had forgotten to take my antibiotics. So do you see how the guidance system is working?
Yeah, I love what you're saying about the guidance system because...
And I really think that I was supposed to tell, you know, you and the audience today, you have a guidance system within you that even when you forget to do something important, it will guide you to do it.
This is so true. And, you know, I think of it as we're collaborators in creating the reality. So,
right.
you know, when you're, you know, because my spiel now is quantum thinking, that when you're mm-hmm. thinking from this expanded, you know, these principles that I know and you present many people on the show about it, that you think in terms of fields. It's not just mm-hmm. thinking. You relate in terms of a field, whereas the industrial age worldview, which said only physical matter is real, and mm-hmm. so it oriented our whole educational system, as you know, the medical industry, our politics, into the either or separation parts, cause and effect, stimulus response world and way of thinking. So in education, we're not talking about I'm creating that we aren't starting. What you and I are talking about now, Susan, is that these greater faculties that we have that we're not focused on in school, where you're looking at the physical dimension and you're studying the brain, or you're studying brain connections, or you're studying the psychological aspect of mind. But we're not mm-hmm. actually studying or learning the faculties of mind that you're talking about, that I call the 5 natural faculties, intent, intuition, subtle energy, resonance, and meditative states. So when you talk about that we're in fields,
mm-hmm.
that we're in fields of, you know, it's a multidimensional field of, we know, energy and flux informed by intelligence, and that we're always connected, and that I think what you're focusing on is that, for this conversation, which I love, is that we each have that some unique way of connecting to wisdom. you know, what people call the higher self or whatever. It's like when we're aware of it, that we're always in collaboration with the intelligent mind field, meaning what
right.
we hold in awareness, our individualized form of consciousness connected to the, you know, bigger all-encompassing field, that we're going to be guided. It's like without even really knowing it. That's what I love what you
mm-hmm.
brought up, because sometimes I'll say to my husband, Alan Collins, who's my partner in life and all things business, I'll say, you know, I don't know how I know this, but I just
mm-hmm.
know it.
Right.
And it's something like that. It's that, but it's even what you're talking about is even more subtle, that you will be guided to something, and you're not sure why, or you're not even thinking about it maybe until after the fact. You're reflective.
Right.
And I'm sure you know that, you know, the experiments that are going on and that have gone on in science, I could imagine still going, where we are reacting, we can measure, I think, through the brain, pictures, you know the terminology,
mm-hmm.
you're the doctor,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not the scientist, but through these physiological responses, let me put it that way,
mm-hmm.
reacting to an event before it happens.
Right, that's true. I think that the key for me to understand this is the idea of humility, which you bring up in your book, that is so important. If you realize that the field that we're connected to actually is the Akashic Records and is beyond space and time and actually knows what's good for you and what the path is that you should be on, even if you don't, then what can happen is all you have to do is learn to follow the guidance signs, which is what I think your book does. I think your book points out the signs, the path, the clues, you know, that sort of thing. Because you and I, at the personality level, can never know what all that is knows. I mean, we can't, and we need to realize that.
Exactly.
You know, the quantum thinking is learning those skills and learning the clues along the way to connect to this field and then to follow the correct path. And it's really the only way to enlightenment. It's the only way to really understanding who you are and what you are and what you're connected to. And so I think it's the only thing we really have to do in life.
I, of course, concur 100%. And, you know, I call this, what you're referring to, living in the unknowable, because you're bringing
mm-hmm.
out, you know, I had this client consultation yesterday. We have, you know, private clients most of any kind, but, you know, senior executives a lot in corporations.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I was talking to this client yesterday about this very thing, where that you can never, you know, because he was talking about a decision, you know, being confused about a decision that he needed to make, or, you
mm-hmm.
know, coming in with all the logic, you know, the pros and cons
right.
aspect of it, which is fine. But I was talking about exactly what you're pointing to, that whatever we think of as divine, or this all that is, let's call divine creator, you know, the source field,
mm-hmm.
let's
source.
Call it that,
yeah.
infinite intelligence, the Akashic Records, is that, as you said, in a given moment in space-time, we can never know it. completely. Mm-hmm. But actually, I was talking to him about the many faces of God, because people get hung up. You know, they think, oh, no, Jesus is God. No, this one is God. This one is God. And in my book, I wrote, will the real God please stand up?
All right.
But, you know, it's like, well, there are many, just as we have our unique wisdom, we have our individual archetypes that we relate to, the many faces mm-hmm. or facets of God. It may not even be a face. It could just be, you know, plant spirits, animal spirits mm-hmm. of the indigenous culture. So whatever you're relating to, but your point, that we can never know it all, but we can live, this is the quantum thinking aspect of it, mm-hmm. in the unknowable.
Right.
Not like, oh, my God, I can never know this, but in the sense of interacting with what is in this moment to my personality, mm-hmm. you know, to my immanent self in this moment, my transcendent self, that awareness that is unbounded, that is able to look at what I'm even mm-hmm. thinking, that in that relationship, I can know that something is going to be revealed to me, that mm-hmm. I can connect to information or
right.
intel, I like to call. I'm watching a lot of spy movies with my husband lately.
Right.
<You know? laughs> Kind of clever in the way that, you know, the thinking is. But it's that we can connect to that mm-hmm. when we, I would say, use the word master, the way that our faculties of mind actually work. And as you say, mm-hmm. this is the all there is to do, because that makes
right.
the magic of life, of living.
It, exactly. And I love another spy phrase. Spirit operates on a need-to-know basis. And I think you know what
right.
I mean.
That's great. I love that.
And a lot of times you just don't need to know.
Right.
At the personality level. And it's better that you don't.
Yeah, a lot of times
it,
don't
it really
even
is true,
know, right?
Exactly, exactly. And I think that comes in with the humility aspect. You know, you just need to pay attention to what's coming in your thoughts. And that's why you need to meditate, so that you can blank your mind, so that you can receive these impressions. Because if your mind's always going a mile a minute, you won't get the messages. You won't get the message to get up and go eat something, even though you're not hungry.
That's exactly it. So what
yeah.
That's why I consider, you know, meditation as one of the natural states, but it's again,
mm-hmm.
it's connecting in. Because how I'm, you know, really thinking of everything lately, and, you know, you think about, well, connecting in to the Akashic Records, are there past lives, are there parallel lives, or, you know, how do I use my intuition to connect into this non-local mind field, as it's called?
Mm-hmm.
And it's that because of our conditioning from the industrial age assumptions, which are, you know, the linear, step-by-step, how-to,
mm-hmm.
Time moving only in one direction, that we may think about that we're going, you know, in mind, that you're going
mm-hmm.
somewhere. But I think of it, Susan, more like we're connecting in. And, you know, to the coordinates, but it's like the internet. It's like you're always online,
mm-hmm.
and what are you going to connect into? You know, what reality
mm-hmm.
are you going to create? But what you're talking about here, which is that, so I think of meditation as a very important practice, as we know, many, many forms. And one of my great teachers, who was a meditation master from formerly of the head of the Siddha yoga tradition,
mm-hmm.
and he said, whatever you are deeply involved in,
mm-hmm.
or we could say in modern language, one with,
mm-hmm.
this is meditation. So he was, you know, in his book, I think it's his book Meditation, I don't remember where I read it, but he was saying, you know, a doctor needs to meditate in order to perform your, you know, a surgeon to perform the surgery. You know, athlete needs to be in the meditative state in order to be, you know, performant, the high level performance. So whatever we're doing.
It's called in the zone, in the zone, in
the
popular literature.
So the zone is, and, you know, I'm really happy that you said what you said about Do You Quantum Think, my book, because I just thought, let's put this all together. Mm-hmm. And it, the intent of it for readers is to connect to your own awareness as you read, because all these things, as you say, they're already there. It's already in us, so it's a matter of connectivity. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, if I can put these basic principles in one place, in one system, where you can connect to it, in a sense, it's experiential. Then we can go from merely knowing the wisdom to actually living it, integrate it. So the zero point state is one of the 21 principles that I refer to as distinctions in thinking, in new thinking. That zero point state where that beta activity that you were talking about, you know, if you're mind is very active, blah, 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 you know, that click, 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 where it's like static on the radio of our being, where we're reducing the signal. And so we're maybe not getting clarity on the to get to tune in directly. So I think, you know, like even some of the things we would think of as chores or something like this. This is probably reminds you of, you know, the Buddhists, the where
before enlightenment, whatever, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water.
Right. Is that whatever you're doing is that you realize if I'm here fully present, then I'm engaging my meditative faculty. And the more you engage your meditative faculty by bringing that into your awareness, whether you're actually sitting for meditation or active meditation, but whatever we're doing, you're strengthening that faculty. And then the more you strengthen it, the easier it is for us to tune in to, you know, the big part, you know, okay, what's the next expression of my life, unique life purpose, or what should I be eating right now at my next meal, or what doctor should I be seeking, or how should I attend to my health from which, you know, dimensionality. And we know there are many modalities, which I know I'm pretty sure you include in your work.
Well, there's another important point here in the idea of chores coming up. In your book, it's real clear that the principle of when you think something negative about something, then that becomes your reality. So say you have a chore that you don't normally enjoy doing in the past, and so when you have to do that chore, you project that unpleasantness into the future. And then you live that reality. But I remember I was back in high school telling people that don't do that. I mean, the best thing to do is if there's something you don't like to do, just get it over with, but don't put any negative thinking on it. You know, try to enjoy doing it as you go through it, and then change that perception for every time you have to do it in the future.
That's exactly it, because what... You think about, now, how did the, what I lovingly call, the old world view? See, my revelation was that, you know, our, everything in the universe is a system, and so our thinking is a system. And then I thought, well, if thinking creates reality, what's creating thinking? And we don't realize
habit,
we
unfortunately,
all...
you know, and what? Most of us, it's a habit. Isn't
right,
it?
It's
I mean,
habit.
We don't like to go
it.
Grocery shopping, so every time we have to go grocery shopping, I mean, if it's kind of like this saying, if you can't figure out how to make somebody else do your grocery shopping, then you have to do it. And then every time you have to do grocery shopping, you're going to be unhappy because you don't like to do it. I mean, what a rut to be stuck in.
I know, but I made up this reason, is that we're under the influence of the what is technically called classical mechanical worldview.
Right.
The evolutionary state of, we projected a worldview of, mm-hmm. that gave rise to the genius of machinery. Mm-hmm. And so I think, well, how did that adapt on to our thinking? Is that we became, in many ways, at that stage of humanity's evolution, you know, automatic and mechanical too. Now we know we're mm-hmm. at this time of a leap in consciousness, mm-hmm. and that we're leaping beyond that. But when we can distinguish that, you know, I like to think of it like this: nothing is wrong with us. But when you look at, well, then how does the quantum worldview? How can we establish ourselves in that? The very mm-hmm. fundamental thing is that the old worldview saw objects and circumstances as fixed and solid. Mm-hmm. And so we think we're manipulating around that, but nothing is fixed and solid. And therefore, okay, so what's creating the reality? The context in which we hold something. That's what you're referring to with these chores.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
The context. And we get to choose the context. Because there is no, quote, way that reality is, even if you have 10 years of evidence in the past.
And most people don't know that they can do that. That's why your book's so important.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, what I love this conversation because it's so simple, and it really is easy. You know, I've heard people say, oh, you know, there's like the new, I call it least action bias way, you know, of the culture, the mm-hmm. way the energy or the thought goes simply because it's been that route before. Well, we're never stuck mm-hmm. with anything. Some of them being like change is difficult. You know, these
right,
are least
yeah.
action pathways. They're not absolute truths. Or enlightenment, it's simple, but it's not easy. Well, I think, well, why if I'm creating reality, my mm-hmm. experience of it. We may not be able to create every circumstance that we call the outer world, but we mm-hmm. always have sovereignty to create our relationship to the circumstance. As I say,
right.
that's where our power lies. So I think, well, if I was creating reality, why would I want to create something as simple but not easy? If I want something
yeah.
to be easy, if I want it to be hard, okay, create it as hard. For me, it's like, yeah, it's simple and it's easy. What you're talking about, you're going, and it's very, you know, and it really is a both and. It's the logic. If you're not going to get somebody else to do the grocery shopping, then
right.
let's love it.
Try
you know.
First, you know.
right. It's like, let's get into it and
yeah.
say, and how do we do that? Well, it always starts with the intent. It's like, you
right.
know what? I'm going to love my grocery shopping. You know,
yeah.
My mother is going to be, bless her heart, she's going to be 92 at the time of this recording next month. And
mm-hmm.
she, you know, my father passed away a couple of years ago. They had a great relationship, married 70 years. I mean, that's like amazing in and of itself. And so she's, you know, life is different for her, and
yeah.
she's in pretty good shape. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
she's a lot of friends have passed on. She's by herself. So she knows she can go into a depressed or anxiety state,
mm-hmm.
and she knows that she can shift it. So she wakes mm-hmm. up every day. She'll say it to me, and she wakes up and says, I love my life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that true circumstantially? Not always.
Not always,
but
right.
But she's made a choice.
Yeah, yeah.
At age 92. I'm mm-hmm. going to live from, you know what? I love my life.
Right.
So I love my grocery shopping. It's not.
Right.
Now, here's the thing that's the very important thing about quantum thinking is that it's neither the absolute truth that I really don't like grocery shopping, nor is it the absolute truth, I like to grocery shop. It's fun. I see people. There's new products. Colors are nice. They're playing music, and there's where I shop. You know, whatever. You can make up anything.
Yeah.
But the point that I'm saying, Susan, neither of those statements are the truth. When you realize that, you know, according to this observer effect, that reality, as you experience it, is context-dependent, there is no absolute fixed way,
right,
then you get to choose. So it's very important because it's no more the truth, one or the other. And quantum thinking transcends the old evidence-based conceptual reality that in this point in our, you know, humanity's development, that our institutions are mostly based on. And this is why we see, you know, people who proclaim religious values, and yet they're, I'm talking, the easiest way to see this is through politics, right? Politics and the media. And again, I'm not judging it. I'm just saying that it's, you know, judging in this form, in the sense of denigrating them, I'm just saying that that automaticity of the culture, a conceptual reality, there is, we're not connected to the all that is. We're not yet in consciousness as a collective culture relating to the earth as a living being. And so, you know, why are we trashing the earth? We don't realize, oh, that's the host of our life, really?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
So
it's ignorance. It's ignorance.
Yeah.
Separation, which you point out in your book, which I love because I really think this is true, that there's only one original sin, and that was the idea of separation from God. And then once you become ignorant because you're separated, then you do things that damage you. I mean,
exactly.
When we pollute our world and then we have to detox all these damn chemicals we got in us, otherwise, you know, we can have early death, that's crazy.
It's completely crazy.
It's good for the medical field sometimes. But, you know.
I have the subheading, turn your world inside out, upside down, and backwards. It just might work. You know, because we have some, there's a lot of, you know, convoluted ideas that have, you know, gone into place, and then it becomes, you know, we energize that, and we don't realize, oh, wait a minute, we could change, you know, we can change this. We don't have to live with this. And I think this is the importance of awakened thinking, is not to just be able to point out the problems, but to say to ourselves at this point, okay, this is great. We want to have, you want ascension, you want elevated consciousness, you want to be one with God and your experience of it, then how can we use this in our society? You know, how do we apply this in our own lives, in our, with our families, with ourselves, and what we're trying to do now? And in the way that we think about the world. So if you're looking at, you know, I look at, because we work with, you know, I look at corporate life a lot, that you think, well, if you want to change the source of energy, for example, which is seems to be at the root of many of our problems in the entire world, in the, you know, just every way, economically, politically, that, you know, relations amongst nations, and you think, well, you can't just say down with the oil companies, because that is not quantum thinking. So if you're thinking, you know, what you said about the God, thinking for the whole, from the whole, then is there some way that we can think about this so that we're not, you know, having, we're not against, you know, it's like, this is how things have developed. Now, how do we have our industries transition so that people, you know, the economy, the corporate entities, the people who work there, this is what, that is where, you know, what I call lovingly the consciousness crowd, where we're not really conscious if we're saying, you know, down with the corporation. Because the corporation is made up of thousands, tens of, many times tens of thousands of people that work there.
Yeah.
What about them? So when you start to see things as truly as one, as interconnected, and you start, it shifts the context from which you think. And you start to think in terms of, if we were looking for solution-based, you know, how can we have this work for everyone? It's one of the practices in Quantum Think in the chapter Transformation as Distinct from Change. It's like if you're looking at just holding that in your being, that question, without the quick answer, how can we have this work for everyone? It goes back to what you and I were talking about at the beginning. We're in this collaboration, creative collaboration, with infinite intelligence, with the source field. So a question is a form of intent. If we could be in that question, not like the Pollyanna, you know, whatever that way, but in, you know, deep in a profound way of asking within our being, how can we have this work for everyone? Not how can we make it.
Well, the answer will come forth is what happens next. And
that's
sometimes
exactly
in ways
it.
You don't expect. It really is true that, you know, we have so much help here that we're not even conscious of. Incredible amounts of spiritual help at every level.
And
that's,
you know,
the
I
thing that people don't realize. It's not just us down here floundering around, you know, with a portion of the humanity very much ethically challenged. You know, it's not just what you see. You know, people say nothing can change because look at politicians and nothing can change, so look at corrupt corporations. That's just not true, because even the heads of corrupt corporations can have a change of heart. Corrupt politicians can have a spiritual experience and no longer be corrupt.
That's
and
exactly
spirit
right.
is controlling all of that. You know, you have somebody have a near-death experience, they become semi-enlightened, as you know. Most people
know.
Do. Semi-enlightened, at least, at varying degrees. That's in every book I've ever done on this radio show, which is probably about 15 of them, on near-death experiences. So even the guy on Sopranos, the young nephew who had a near-death experience on the Sopranos, you know, his life was changed. You know?
That's exactly right.
And he had
and
a really,
you know,
negative near-death
saying,
experience, you know, being pulled down by demons, you know, but it changes your life.
It's so true, and I have people, you know,
true.
Really close friends of
yeah.
mine who have
he quit
had
doing drugs, you know.
And, you know, yeah. but, you know, that's what I call a crisis awakening. So
it is.
I think,
and it happens.
We could. What about a conscious awakening? That's
right,
what I'm, you
right.
know, I'm on the campaign for conscious awakening. Because
right,
I do think
yeah.
that, you know, when we talk about, well, evolving our own consciousness, well, first of all, it is a choice. It's a,
yeah.
you know, it's a conscious choice that it's not just, okay, well, consciousness is evolving, great, but what's your part in it? You know, that you want to step in and be the other, the collaboration is with you and spirit.
Right.
And so if I'm saying, well, you know what, let me see, because the higher state I can get myself in, the more that I'm aware of, I'm conscious awakening, so that if I have a reaction to something in life, you know, like a, let's say a low-level reaction
mm-hmm.
where I'm getting, you know, angry or I want to strike out at someone. It doesn't happen mm-hmm. to me too often, these, thank goodness, but let's say I do, then in that moment is when the mastery kicks in, because then you're saying, you know, I'm feeling like I want to slap this guy in the face, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
what's going on? How do I use this energy, you know, transmute it? Or
mm-hmm.
what am I supposed to be seeing here for myself? And to me, that's part of that can keep you from the crisis awakening, because the crisis awakening, and I know that probably karmically, dharmically, that is going on. I mean, you as a doctor, you see it. Things happen. You know, and sometimes maybe that's just the way that person needed to wake up.
Right.
And so that I think what you're saying, you know, is so important, Susan. The bigger point is that either, you know, we're all God or no one is. So
right.
you can't pick out, you know, or I call it, you know, consciousness at your convenience.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. And so this is where we step in to really take command of our own, those subtleties, you know, and this is where the wisdom, I think, is important that we, you and I are discussing, where, you know, you've got your own, on Huffington Post, I started writing for them, they have a section on there, you know, GPS for the soul. It's like we've
mm-hmm.
got our own GPS where we can attune if you just have an intent to be attuned. So when you have
right.
a judgment about the corporation, you know, the corrupt this, it's like, okay, how can, you know, I like to think of it as there are those of us who are awakening and know we're awake and are aware that we're awakening, and there are those of us who are awakening and maybe not yet aware
right.
that we're awakening. You know, and then that includes everyone, and we're all here doing that together. And if we really think, you know, if you get the sense, if you, this is why I like, you know, going from knowing the wisdom to actually living it. If you really, you know, go around espousing, we are all interconnected, you know, and we know this scientifically, that there's a constant exchange, that every body, every entity, according to the quantum holography that I learned from Edgar Mitchell, that we're, each body contains the total information experience of that body all the time, and it's constantly mm-hmm. being emitted from that body, and we're constantly in exchange, which I guess is why, you know, you can look at someone and you can, if you're tuned in, you'll know things about that person without mm-hmm. them saying a word, what we would call intuition or psychic connection or whatever. But if we're really interconnected, then here's, you know, my take on this is that we're in this surrounding mind field.
Mm-hmm.
And that the more consciously aware, the more consciously aware, awake that we are, then in how we think about others, in how we think about the politicians,
mm-hmm.
or any group that, you know, makes our skin, you know, the hair on our
mm-hmm.
skin jump, that when we can, you know, what is it really living the wisdom that every great being, you know,
mm-hmm.
compassion, it's like, you want to live the wisdom, okay, let's mm-hmm. look at that compassionately. And I really feel, Susan, that when we generate that state, because we can generate any state, We are in every possible human trait in the possible world, in potentiality, some people call it. But the possible world has existence. This is what the quantum physicists, the leading edge ones, say. So the possible world is not nothing, as you know, because you mentioned the Akashic Records. All of it is here all the time. So it's a question of what is becoming manifest in the ordinary world that we live in, what we have our focus on, what we have our attention on, and what the assumptions we bring to it. So if we're bringing to the world that level of compassion, it's not even I think, I know that is having an effect in the world in a spiritual, energetic way where, you know, we know, let's say, cosmically there's the frequency is, you know, the heightening of frequency energetically going on, and all these things that we all talk about. But I think that's our part, is attending to ourselves in this way so that we are collectively generating the frequency that we want to be in tune with.
Right, right. I have an interesting story that just occurred to me about politics. I didn't realize it until you were talking. I watched House of Cards, and I found it very entertaining, but, you know, it's not really probably quite the way it's, well, we hope anyway, it's not really quite what reality is. Would you agree? Did you watch House of Cards?
Yes, I did. We're hoping they're not murdering each other for their own power.
It's a little dark, okay? It's entertainment, but it's a little
dark.
Yeah,
I do. It's a very well-done show.
So one of my future assignments has to do with politics, and I know very little about politics. So then I was guided to watch The West Wing, okay? Now, then one of my friends who was with the Clinton administration said that it was actually much more like The West Wing than it was House of Cards, you know, day to day, in that arena. So
I don't know The West Wing that much, but was it that people are really committed and they really wanted to work? Kind of thing?
And they worked very hard, and there were some good people and some bad people and some, you know, I mean, there was a range of everything, which is really probably more accurate, you know. There are some people that don't have good intent, but they're not the majority. And it talks a lot about bipartisanship and the lack of that and how people do deals all the time. And we know that's true. I mean, we know in politics they're always doing deals.
Right.
So it's probably a lot more accurate. I'm not saying it is exactly accurate, but overall it probably paints a better picture. So now, because I'm watching The West Wing, I have a much more balanced view of what probably exists, not because it's not in my reality. In the world of medicine, that's not the world of politics, you know, I mean, or government. There's certainly politics
and
medicine.
It's affected.
But
it's affected by politics, though, right?
It is, but it's not the world of it. In other words, you know, we don't govern.
Right, it's a different,
you know, we're not
a different reality, right.
Exactly. And so the idea of statesmanship, the idea of, you know, making a mark on history and all of the things that you see the president's doing and everything, you get much better idea of what's going on by watching a TV series. And isn't that wonderful? You know, your idea of doing a TV series to elevate consciousness is such a wonderful idea, because my consciousness about politics is being shaped by The West Wing. Now, you know, some people might argue it's not real, you know, it's not, but I think it actually, because my friend was involved with it, and she was able to say, no, it actually is very much like The West Wing, you know, on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, because
I mean, that's
when
confirmation.
But I like about what you're saying, Susan, about it, how these things shape our consciousness, because
they do.
They absolutely do. And, you know, I would want to do it entertaining, not a documentary,
right,
not a talking head thing, but I have some ideas.
Like
but
the West Wing.
That's what we like, to be entertained. And it's like that reflection of life, you know, like seeing ourselves in living color.
Yeah.
But
what will we do with various problems? That's what the West Wing is about. You know, they have a problem thrown at them, you know. North Korea does something with, you know, and then they have to solve it. They have to respond without pissing Russia off or China off, you know. You go into that world and you go, oh, my goodness, these people really do live in this world where things can get out of hand very quickly. I mean, think about Obama right now thinking about how to respond to what's going on in Israel. This is very real.
I know. This is very real. He's got Israel, he's got Russia, he's got, you know, and then there's not even to mention all the other things in Africa, you know, because things go in and out of focus in the news.
I'm thinking is we need to start praying for the wisdom of Obama and his advisors.
Exactly. And, you know, even when, before we go to the, because I want to say something about the politics in Bush, mm-hmm, because the power of collective consciousness is huge. But the thing about it, about the TV writing, when you think about, mm-hmm, well, it really, you know, there really is reflected, because people write from what they know. This is a full circle conversation, right? Back to the Isaac Bashevis Singer Nobel laureate who taught me that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're writing from your soul, and you're writing also from your experience. So you have friends who, mm-hmm, worked in politics. They say that really is like that.
Right.
So maybe, you know, there's a Hollywood factor, which makes
entertainment.
You pump it up.
Yeah.
But basically, there's usually some, quote, reality, you know, something that actually happens in what we call real, mm-hmm, life, in those stories or the context from which they're writing. Because who, mm-hmm, are they? They're people writing. Just like if I, you know, when I write a TV, mm-hmm, series, it is from the point of view of what I call the consciousness crowd, what I'm now calling, mm-hmm, the new mainstream, because I'm invoking that as my new way, mm-hmm, of relating to myself. And, you know, it's not from the point of view of the old world either, or drama, you know, mm-hmm, some of those kind of cornball things that we want to transcend. But what about writing it from that point of view? So as a writer or as a creator of a series, I'd be writing from that, because, mm-hmm, that's what I know. That's my experience.
Right.
And now
it doesn't come out of nothingness. You know,
exactly.
You don't make it out of nothing. Nobody ever does, because we just don't create that way. We create from what we know.
That's exactly right. And, you know, one time I saw Stephen King, you know, the very famous horror writer.
The master of horror writing.
Yeah,
the current master.
The king.
Yeah.
And he said,
he's,
you know,
good.
Well, I never read his stuff because I don't want those. I'm too afraid. But he said he wrote that.
He's very good
with
good and evil, I'll tell you. Very good.
Yeah. But he's writing that. Maybe I should read one, because I like to think from
Read The Stand. If you're going to read anything, or just see the TV series.
Read which one?
The Stand. It's one of his best works. It talks about how good and evil work together for the greater good, which is a very important spiritual
concept. That's like a
concept.
Nietzsche said, you know, the good beyond good and evil.
Right.
But, you know, what he said is that he wrote that because he, like, put his biggest fears into his writing.
Right.
And then I guess
he made the
resolution of it, too. So there's that aspect to it, too. But let's just take what you were saying earlier about praying for the president. Because when Bush was president, the young Bush before this, and, you know, I, in terms of just, you know, agreeing or thinking, was he, you know, my view on was he a good president or not, I wouldn't say I had the most positive impression. But I did think at the time, when everyone was bashing him, now, Obama has it much worse because, you know, African American and whatever, and people, you know, all the prejudice and all that. He's got it worse than Bush. But there was a lot of bashing, Bush bashing going on by, quote, liberals. And I would think that what you were saying, I would think, you know, whatever it is, whoever is in power, this person is the president.
Mm-hmm.
Our country is a, you know, important leader in the world, regardless of all the other people that are saying, you know, we're going downhill, mm-hmm. it's the fall of the Roman Empire. I mean, I don't really buy into that because I see things as evolution as a spiral. So maybe sometimes you see the downward part, but you're basically going up. And so but I just think that about what you just said. It's like, what if we all held, you know, held it like this? That's the president. He has a huge role right now,
responsibility,
Obama.
Responsibility,
in the world. Let's have our highest and best thoughts on
for
this leader.
Him and our
because
country, right. Yeah.
You're not... Your bad thoughts are not going to help the situation.
No, they aren't. Diane, we're going to have to wrap it up now. They have a show coming on we have to get off for. Would you please quickly give your contact information?
Yes, and I want to just thank you so much for having me on. I just love the conversation with you. You can reach me, and please do, at my website, which is dianecollins.com. It's Diane with two N's, D-I-A-N-N-E-C-O-L-L-I-N-S. And when you sign up for the newsletter, you will get access to one of my very favorite articles I wrote, You Can't Get There From Here, which talks about transformation as distinct from change and very, you know, vivid everyday examples in business and in life. And there's a lot of audio and video on there, so please do come and, you know, I have Facebook. We have all the good ways of connecting, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. So thanks for letting
Diane,
me share that.
Oh, you're so welcome. Diane, I would like to invite you back because obviously we have a lot more to talk about.
Yeah, I'd love it. I'd love it.
All righty. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. We need to get off now, but we've been interviewing Diane Collins, DU Quantum Think, and we'll have her back on to continue this conversation. Thank you very much.